Welcome to another episode of the Growth Focus podcast, where we bring together tech leaders from all across the globe to share their time, their insights, and their expertise with us to help us grow. My name is Gary Lafter, your host and CEO of the Growth Focus Partnerships, where we take experts in their field and turn them into authorities by installing client acquisition systems that actually work for tech. We turn their conversations into clients and their expertise into insights. On this episode, I couldn't be more pleased to have Jeremy with us. We're going to be talking about sometimes about what pivot makes works, what changes, why you don't always have to do what you think you have to do, and really learning from other industries outside of you and bringing those in and seeing how they can work with a little tweak as well to help you grow. So I can't wait to get into it. So without further ado, Jeremy, it's an absolute pleasure to have you here today. Why don't you start off by introducing yourself? Tell us who you are and what is it that you do?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Gary. Great to be here. So Jeremy Boudinet, I'm VP of Growth at Texla. We're the fastest growing SMS marketing platform in the country. Businesses use us to text their customers, send bulk text, two-way text. We primarily serve North American small businesses. Well, I've been with the company for a year and a half. It's been an exciting journey. We've raised about $12 million in venture capital funding, and our goal is to become what MailChimp was to email marketing. We want to be that for SMS. So exciting times.
I love that hat. You can actually hang your hat on that. We're going to be the MailChimp of this. And I think it's really good when you can actually have an association with that. And I love great entrances. So we're going to be this. So if people don't know who you are, and I'm just saying, we're kicking off this episode strong, guys. You know, so if you're watching this or listening to this, we've just kicked that off and said, who do you want to be, guys, be? Who do you want to be known as? We want to be this or that. What a great way to start. So, Jeremy, you've scaled different companies differently across your career. But why don't we start at the beginning? Can you share a little bit about your journey and what first sparked your interest into tech and business growth?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a very unusual sort of path into working in tech and working in startups. I have a law degree that I don't use from the University of Pittsburgh. And I graduated 2012 and didn't really know what I wanted to do. I kind of didn't want to be a lawyer, Gary. What had happened was I had some college buddies who founded a startup called Ambition, actually wearing their hat right now. Shouts out to the Ambition guys. First company out of Tennessee to be accepted into Y Combinator. They were a sales gamification startup. And they reached out to me, Gary, because in college I had a paper writing business where I had the Boudinet guarantee and A or B or your money back. And it blew up. It was regional all throughout the Southeast. I went to the University of Tennessee. And so they reached out to me and they said, do you want to come and be the first marketing hire at Ambition, first business team hire? So I joined, you know, this early stage VC backed SaaS startup with no marketing experience, no tech experience. You know, I was never a tech guy. I think the only C I got in college was in advertising. It was like I got into it and they gave me the job description. All this was at the rise of HubSpot, where it was content marketing, blogging, social media was all really coming to the fore. I joined the company. We were, you know, we had two customers at that time. And over the next 4 years, I took us to a Series A as head of marketing. And it was a perilous journey. We, you know, were, you know, basically trying to fight for survival the first 2 years. But I really learned the chops of marketing in the trenches there at Ambition.
Absolutely. And I think this is the key thing we're going to be talking about, marketing and growth. And, you know, there's those who have listened to this episode, this podcast before, and those who know me and I'm busy, know that at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how good your product or your service is, you cannot have the field of dreams mentality. You've got to get out there. Yes, you've got to get your name out there. Otherwise, you end up being this best kept secret, and it gets tougher and tougher the more you're a secret as new competition comes on the scene every single day. So Jeremy, you've scaled companies, you know, as I said earlier, at different stages, you know, Texter today, but also Ambitious and Nextiv. Can you tell us one key lesson about growth that you've managed to hold on to and bring to the fore today?
Yeah, for sure. So I think about growth in terms of, like, you reverse engineer whatever the path to growth is. So you look at, how do we get in front of, what's the fastest distribution channel to get in front of as many people as possible? You know, at Ambition, we did some really creative content marketing strategies that were, we, like, zigged everyone else, zagged, everyone was doing boring B2B business content. We decided we were going to have some fun with content. We did like an annual tournament where you pit 64 software companies against each other and like live broadcasted the results. It blew up. It went viral, got huge. At Nextiva, you know, the next company I worked at, we focused on sponsorships and stuff like that, where we sponsored like the Pac-12 and we were on television and we sponsored the Buffalo Bills. And we went for a much broader approach. Ubiquitous, which was the next company I went to after that, was an influencer marketing company. We did an affiliate deal with a company that was ranking number one on Google for every key search term in our industry. And we got a massive amount of leads through that. So, and then at Tesla, we, you know, same similar sort of deal. We found, you know, some top ranking articles that we were able to worm our way into that were ranking one on Google. We AstroTurf Reddit. We focused on YouTube content. So really thinking about, okay, where are our buyers and how do we get in front of them as fast as possible? And how do we get in front of as many of them as fast as possible? So three of the four companies I worked at, we had very small budgets. And so a lot of what I do is guerrilla marketing to sort of get placements on the internet in places that, you know, can get a lot of free eyeballs. And so that's what we're doing at Tesla. That's what we've done in the past. And it's, there's a different approach each time, but you find a way to make it work. You know.
Yeah. Well, I want to dive a little bit into this guerrilla marketing. And you and I have spoken before about guerrilla marketing, but unless you're usually in marketing or using guerrilla marketing, it's probably a term that most people haven't thought of, especially within the tech field. Can you give us a couple of tactics that you've used that's worked well for you that maybe people do not realize or have not even thought of?
Yeah. So one we used at Tesla early on was we saw that everyone wants to rank on SEO, right? Everyone wants to be on page one of Google for a key search term. Well, it takes forever to organically build that SEO. So we were like, we don't have years to do this. How do we quickly start, you know, getting on page one? And we saw that Reddit was Google was rewarding a lot of Reddit posts in the SMS marketing space with page one placements that were pretty high up. So we found a guy that could essentially get us post that would rank on page one for Reddit. It was very inexpensive. It was like $1,000. And sure, and he also guaranteed it. He said, if I don't get on page one, I'll give you your money back. So we tried it. Boom, immediate results. I mean, we suddenly went from having 3-4 signups a day to having, you know, 15 signups a day off that one play. So again, looking at, I mean, we'd start with me doing the searches for SMS marketing software and things like that, seeing what came up, and then, you know, sort of reverse engineering that with like, okay, how can we get in here? So that was one example. Another example was we saw that YouTube, there was a lot of search volume for SMS marketing software on YouTube. So we did a listicle of the top 5 SMS marketing software platforms for 2025. Guess what number one was? And we just published the video, crowdsourced some engagement for it, and we boosted it a little bit. We spent probably $100 boosting it. It's now got over 11,000 views on YouTube. If you search YouTube for SMS marketing software, we ranked number one on that. So that's the second biggest, obviously, search platform, you know, on the internet right there. We're ranking one for that. So things like that, man. I mean, the third thing I'll add is that this was kind of a gangster move. I won't take full credit for this. This is our CEO helping a lot with this too. But we tried forever. Zapier had the number one article on Google for SMS marketing software. Huge volume, 2,000 searches every month for this term. We wanted to be on this article so badly, we literally had our engineers embed Zapier into Tesla. We actually like built it into the platform. We reached out to the Zapier folks. I probably reached out 30 times, Gary, I reached out to the author. I reached out to another guy who was credited with writing that. I reached out to the content marketing leader. I reached out to the VP of marketing. I mean, no one was responding. So finally, like I was complaining to our CEO. I'm like, dude, I cannot get into this article. We literally went to our investor who said he had a connection to Zapier. And we went through a friend of his, got to the CEO of Zapier. He pushed it down to the content marketing leader. We finally got in the article, another massive spike in signups. So, but it took a year. It took a year of us doing that. But all these things are free. All of these were like, we spent $2,000 to like, you know, do all these things, probably max. So, yeah. I mean, they're our most valuable lead channels for organic growth. So.
Yeah, and there's a lot of talk about the organic growth nowadays. You know, we've gone from the organic growth to paid growth, almost back to organic growth.
Yeah.
The key thing here is, and I wonder if you could share a couple of insights on the definition of guerrilla marketing. You know, you've had some fantastic results from them, you know, for either free, as you said, or for not a lot of money. and the ROI on it is off the charts, all right? The ROI is just absolutely fantastic. But when it comes to guerrilla marketing, what is your definition of that for people who are listening and watching who have not necessarily understood exactly what that is?
Yeah, I love that. No one's ever asked me that. And I use that term all the time, so it's fun to kind of define it here. I would say guerrilla marketing is anything where you're, people call it growth hacking, you know, or what, which I kind of hate that term, but it's really fast tracking and not paying for massive distribution, you know, and you're doing something in a way where you're getting in front of a lot of people. And so that, I would call that, like, there's a couple different approaches. One is, you know, sort of the creative sort of, you know, organic content marketing approaches I described earlier. Stuff I've done in the past, we did these PR stunts, Gary, at my last company, where we paid a PR firm $5,000 a month. And what they would do, though, is they would do basically press stunts with us. So we did at Ubiquitous, one of the most successful campaigns we ever did, we paid people $1,000. We had a job posting where we were like, all right, we're going to pay someone $1,000 to watch TikTok for 8 hours straight. And that that job posting ended up going viral. We were in the New York Post. We were in Newsweek. We were in Time. I was getting interviewed by TV outlets, and we had 11, I think it was 11,000 people apply for the job, which I could have never guessed, you know, like it would be that successful. But it drove a ton of awareness to Ubiquitous, and it was just a guerrilla marketing stunt. Most people think of PR as like, oh, you do a press release announcing your latest company thing, you know, blah, blah, no one cares, you know, it doesn't get a lot of traction. But we really looked at it as a way to just, how do we like get mass awareness, you know, and kind of like, you know, it jump into the imagination of the American public. So that was another example of that. And then going back to Ambition, where I probably had my best guerrilla marketing places, I had no budget Ambition the whole 4 years I was there. Everything was content based. And it was, I really took a lot of cues from the sports. I read a lot of like sports blogs like Barstool and Deadspin, you know, Deadspin back in the day. And then I would read like Pitchfork for like music. So I took a lot of cues from these sort of viral like publications online. I would publish really ridiculous articles that, you know, were business related, but it would be like, you know, if football coaches were sales leaders, what would they be like? You know what I mean? And I would basically take all these NFL coaches and talk about them. And then we post them on LinkedIn. People would actually read them because it was so different than like your typical LinkedIn content. So I still don't really see people doing that where they try to have this cool merger of like pop culture and business. I think it's an opening still for people. But long story short, guerrilla marketing is you don't pay to play. You find a way to get out in front of people and you do things that capture the imagination, you know, and get in front of as many people as possible by any means necessary. So
yeah, what a great definition of that. And you're doing it in a cross feed way, something that people do not think about. And that's the key thing. We talked about zig and zag before, you and I. And you know, when everyone is zigging, you've got to do a zag. You've got to do something yes. completely different. You've got to break pattern, you've got to pattern interrupt that.
Yes.
And so people can begin to understand and go, whoa. And if it, you know, nowadays, what do they call it nowadays? Stopping the scroll. And yes. You mentioned LinkedIn. You mentioned it LinkedIn there, Jeremy. And today, LinkedIn is just, it's changed. LinkedIn has changed. It's now far more product and service led, almost semi-advertising on that. And it's not stopping the scroll. This is the unfortunate thing. Now, people are literally just scrolling past all of this. And, you know, when you do something like what you said there, guerrilla marketing, let's pattern interrupt. Let's break that pattern. Let someone stop and go, well, that's different. You know, and just relate it to. So for those listening and watching today, perhaps, you know, if you've never thought about guerrilla marketing or thinking, well, just think about what is the weirdest thing you can do and see if it's feasible, you know?
Yeah.
And then I think it's almost like to lose that armor or professionalism sometimes. It doesn't mean you have to be unprofessional. It's just allowing yourself a little bit.
Yeah. That's well said. I think people, they cloak themselves in that professionalism, but it almost strips the humanity out of, you know, what they're trying to do. And people, at the end of the day, it's social media. It's about connecting with other humans. So like, show your humanity, show your interests, be different, be weird. It's watch people pay attention all of a sudden. You know what I'm yeah. saying? Because it's different. Like you said, Pat, I love the term pattern interrupt. I actually had that word in my head the other day, just thinking about some marketing ideas. And because that's really it. You have to surprise and delight someone's brain. And then they're going to, you know, before they engage with you. So
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. So this is a key thing. I want to talk about this crowded space you're in. SMS marketing,
yeah.
Massively noisy market, huge market, different place. And I know you and I, there's something different about that. But what's been your approach in standing out in this, you know, oversaturated, very noisy competitive marketplace?
Yeah, so great question. And it's super saturated. There are tons of SMS marketing platforms. And I'll go back to when I first was interviewing for the job with Luke, our CEO. And what got me interested in Texla was I asked Luke, I was like, Luke, what's our approach to market? We're the newest ones. You know, you're the newest guys on the block. This place is crowded. How are you gonna like stand out? And he nailed it. He literally absolutely nailed the go-to-market strategy. And it was very simple. We're going to be priced infinitely cheaper than everyone else in the market because everyone else is overcharging. We're going to have the easiest to use platform because we're selling to small business owners who don't have time to figure out how to use a clunky, complex software. And three, support in this industry is notoriously terrible. We're going to offer phenomenal hands-on customer support. And that was it. And I heard that and it really resonated me, Gary, because I'd worked at Nextiva, which is a $3 billion valuation company now. And that was the exact same approach they took. They sold business phone systems. So they're like the big brother to business texting, you know, it's calling. And I was like, well, that exact approach took Nextiva to a $3 billion valuation. I don't see why it wouldn't work in, you know, SMS marketing. Credit to Luke, because he knew that a year and a half ago when the company was, you know, still so young and they were 6 employees. And we've really held true to those beliefs and values. We're a penny per text. We're like $25 a month for a subscription. We're infinitely cheaper than everyone else in the space. And every time I talk, it's so easy. I do a lot of our onboarding calls, you know, with new customers. They're coming from somewhere else and they're just aghast at how cheap it is. And we still have great margins. You know, it's just that these other companies are all PE backed and they've all decided, oh, well, hey, we can jack up the pricing to 3 cents a text and people will still pay it. So we see an opening in the market there. We're attacking it. That messaging is everywhere on our websites, everywhere on social media. We reiterate to our customers all the time and we really live by it. So it's very nice, easy, simple value propositions. And, you know, it's something we really stand by.
Yeah. And it's not overcomplicated. Yeah. And this is the key thing. We tend to overcomplicate things. And then once you try and overcomplicating it, it becomes so difficult for someone to grasp.
Yes.
It just, is it easy? Will it work for me? And will I make my money on it? That's as simple as what they need it to be. And when you overconvolute it, and then you're just confusing people. And I think especially in tech, we want to be the cleverest person in the room. We want to show how clever we are and how great this thing is. But ultimately, no one cares.
Yes.
And we say this all day, every day. No one cares about your product or your service. They only care what they're going to get out of it. That's all they care about.
It's so true, man. It's so true. There's two quotes I think of with that. One is any idiot can make something complex, you know, but it takes a genius to make something simple. So actually, you're not being smart or crafty or clever by using lots of corporate jargon, you know, all that stuff. You're actually obfuscating the real value that your product brings. And then, God, the second quote is that the hallmark of a charlatan is you make something sound super complex. You know, we keep it very simple, straightforward, no bullshit, you know, pardon my French, but people love that. They love that. Yeah. It's very clear on our website. When we talk to them, it's the same thing, the experience they get. It's the same thing. Our reviews on G2 all say the same thing. So yeah, the simplicity of it's a beautiful thing, especially when you're selling to small business owners too, who are, you know, tend to be, they have a million priorities. They don't have time to like figure out what you're selling them. They need it to work fast. They need to know the value fast and they're gonna make a decision very fast. Yeah. So
it's almost like, I almost call it the light switch mentality. You know, when you walk into a room and you flick the light switch, you only flick the light switch for one reason, because you want light in the room.
Yes.
That's it. They don't care about how the electricity gets from the switch up the wall, across the ceiling, down to your light, what light bulb you got. It's just give me light. I'm a busy person. I walk into a room. I want a light so I can get on with stuff, you know, and just keeping it simple from that. So that being said, we talked a lot about, you know, what's worked for you, some great results out of the Guerrilla Mark and the pattern interrupt. So let's talk about the flip side. You know, you've been in the game now through various companies for some time now. What is one growth tactic or marketing strategy that you've tried that really didn't work out? And what did you learn from that?
Yeah, great questions. I mean, one we tried at Texla that I was disappointed to not work out was we adopted a platform called ReSquared. we tried to do outbound, for lack of a better word. We were like, okay, let's do outbound. Let's see if we can do outbound scale. And we used a tool called ReSquared to find small business owners. And we were doing these, you know, sort of elaborate outbound sequences, targeting them with like, hey, like say you're probably business texting, you need, you know, platforms can save you money, all this stuff. Completely flopped. I mean, I'm talking, Gary, like we had like one positive response in like 4 months and we reached out to thousands of people. We also did, I thought I was being super clever, similar approach. In tandem with that, we use a tool called Vector, very similar to RB2B. No shots at Vector. I love the founders. They share investors with us, but we use that tool to find people who were searching for our competitors on Google. And I basically set this flow where we were auto-piping into this outbound email engine we had going. We were sending them emails saying, hey, switch from Slick Text and save 75% of your business texting bill. No one gave a shit. No one cared. We got almost no responses. We were hitting thousands and thousands of people a week. And I was like, man, like none of these are working. We ultimately turned off outbound at Tesla. We are a fully inbound focused funnel. And, you know, to this day, it kind of surprised me. It didn't work. I don't know if the problem, I tried different messaging. I tried all kinds of different stuff, but nothing seemed to work. So it goes to show you that I thought it was really good outbound, by the way. I was pretty cocky. I was telling Luke, this is going to crush it. But it goes to show you that you really never know. And so, but you have to double down what's working and you have to kill what's not working because it's costing you money and it's costing you, more importantly, time. I was spending a lot of time on these outbound campaigns and they weren't yielding results. So the more time I was focusing on that, the less time I was focusing on optimizing your inbound funnel, doing all this other stuff.
So, yeah, absolutely. And that's a key thing, isn't it? It's about giving it a go, because especially when it comes into marketing, people, we've certainly found that they tend to stick to stuff they think they know and avoid the stuff they think they don't know. But until you try it, until you go out there and then make your mind up quickly and then change your mind quickly, you know, when it doesn't work, cut it out. But you've tried it, because you never know if it's going to work for you. Like you said, if you're going to try something different and do that pattern interrupt, how do you know? It's such a weird, far out thing that you think, will this work? But if I don't try it, the answer is always going to be no. And I think this is a key thing, what we talked about before, wasn't it? Was if you try and stay in your bubble and zig with everybody else, then you're going to sound like everybody else. You're not going to stand out from that, you know?
Exactly. I think we try, you know, I think, you know, to anyone who's trying new things, it's like, give it 3 or 4 months, you know, and really give it a good faith effort, test and change what you're doing a little bit, change tactically what you're doing inside the strategy and see if, okay, maybe the problem is my messaging or it's, we did all that, you know what I'm saying? Like, we didn't just like try it for a month and it didn't work and we didn't like change the messaging and all that good stuff. And we did all the tactical tweaks and nothing. We ultimately just decided this isn't the best route to market for us and we need to focus elsewhere. And, you know, so, but yeah, we continue to try new things here, Gary. I love trying new marketing initiatives. It's part of the fun of being a marketer, you know, is trying new things and see, especially if something hits, then you're like, it's like a dopamine rush.
It's like finding a new game to play where you can win, isn't it? It's always, what's another sport I can play? What's another game I can learn to play and make it work?
Exactly. And what I love about being, you know, in charge of growth is, and I mean, 3 of the 4 companies I was at, I was basically tied to our overall revenue metrics. There's a very clear score. You know, I can see every day how many signups we have, how many subscribers we have, how much revenue we're making. And so when a new channel turns on and it works, I see those numbers going up and start to hockey stick. You know, that's like all the joy for me. I'm a competitive guy. You know, it's all a competition to me. So, you know, I think that's what drives me a lot every day.
Yeah, that is so cool. So let's talk about, you know, using content to build authority for your brand and for your story. What types of content have been most effective for you and the companies you've been with?
We've done so much different content, all the different companies I've been at. I'll try to think of the greatest hits from over the years and some of the stuff we've done that, like, I've done every place I've been. One of them is reviews. I continue to be an advocate for reviews, even though G2 has gotten hammered by SEO updates and is no longer ranking like it used to. I think the benefit of getting customer reviews, whether it's on Google, you definitely want to do Google, obviously, and you want to do if you're a software company, do G2 or Capterra. The benefit of reviews is that you can point to that and say to a customer, hey, don't take our word for it, look what our customers are saying. And the benefit as a marketer is that you can go read those reviews. I think the hidden benefit is you go read those reviews and your customers will tell you how to sell your product. Like they will literally, you don't have to come up with the messaging yourself. You can go and look at what they're saying and figure out, okay, this is why they're buying this. Where this really came in handy for me, Gary, was at Ambition. We were a sales gamification platform. We started out as fantasy football for sales. That was literally our pitch, was like, you can run like fantasy sales contests with Ambition. Well, people like thought that was a really cool idea, but they didn't necessarily want to pay for that. So we had a hard time getting customers initially. I really struggled with the messaging for the first year and a half, 2 years. And I got a bunch of reviews for us though on G2. I remember one day I went through and just read all the reviews and it started to hit me, like clicked, that really what people were buying was transparency and accountability for their sales teams. They kept talking about that in the reviews. They're like, I love that I can see all my reps' numbers. I love that we're holding them accountable to goals and they're having competitions and it's changed the culture of my sales team. And so all of our messaging based on what I saw appearing over and over and over again in our reviews, all of our messaging, I changed on our website to be like, Ambition, we're not selling sales gamification software. We're selling transparency and accountability for your sales force. Boom. Like people love that messaging. We, you know, our ACV was like 30K a year. People were paying it. They were, you know, we got to a Series A off that messaging. So reviews are a big one. I'd say another big one is, you know, obviously case studies, customer stories, everyone still wants to see those. I still love doing those. It's tied into reviews. And then other content I'm big on video right now. Like I think just doing videos, we did a video initiative here at Texla where it was me. We got a little camera set up. I hired a guy to do post-production. It was super cheap. It was like $400 a video, but just explaining the product, doing product tutorials, doing sort of like market discussions. I think ranking out YouTube is still for most industries super underrated as a search platform, and Google's brutal. You know, if you want to rank on Google, we're working on it, but we know that's like a 2-3 year journey. Whereas YouTube, you can rank tomorrow if you get the right video going. That's another big one we've done. And the last thing I'll go back to is I think the PR stunts. I think that's super underrated for two reasons. One, you can get viral marketing growth with it. If you get the right deal going, the right story going, you can blow up pretty quickly. And then two, it's the fastest way to drive backlinks, which actually drives SEO, you know, growth. So if you can, you know, do a PR stunt where you get 20 high quality backlinks off one article, you know, or one piece, like that's worth a ton of money to you, because you know I don't know how else you're gonna get those backlinks.
No, so exactly,
yeah
it's really cool. So let's talk about going how I mean, this is absolutely fantastic, Jeremy. You know, the growth that you've had, and one thing that we didn't mention was that, you know, although that you're coming in cheaper than your competition, you know, it's a very, very good value offer there. It hasn't staggered your growth at all. It hasn't hindered your growth at all, has it? You know, so looking ahead to the next sort of 12 to 24 months, what are your biggest growth goals and what's in place to help you?
Yeah, we have very aggressive growth goals at Texla. I mean, as I said, we're going to be the MailChimp of SMS. So a couple of things we're looking at are partnerships. We see partnerships as our big, you know, sort of whale opportunity to really grow really fast in the market, whether it be with other tech companies or other people who could be resellers of Texla. So we're aggressively exploring those and doing profit sharing with that. That's one of the big ones. Another big thing we're doing is we are doing Google ads, and we're starting to see the ROI from that reach a good place. I think we'll be doubling down that going forward for sure. We're doubling down YouTube as well, and video marketing. That's going to be coming up in the next few months. So it's, you know, that's really what we're talking about there is organic, you know, an organic content play through YouTube. We're talking about a PPC play through Google. And then we're talking about, you know, partnerships as like a huge, you know, huge growth lever. So we think if we can nail those three, you know, we can really just turn on the accelerator for Texla's growth. So
I totally see that, you know, white labeling partnerships and white labeling rather than onesie twosies, as it were. You're just hitting a much, much bigger, massive market. And the final one is YouTube. I think, again, I totally agree with you, totally underutilized, massive growth potential there, and a great way to get your branding and authority out there, you know, via video. This is the key. People would rather watch videos than read. And this is the key thing, especially in the shorts. The shorts,
totally.
It's easy for them to digest. just by looking at subtitles in a video.
100%. I think people get hung up on, you know, this video has to look like it was made in Hollywood or something like that. It doesn't. Go watch the most popular videos on YouTube. The videos we did that took off, went viral, it's me sitting at a desk with a wall behind me, you know, and a laptop in front of me. And it's super basic, but, you know, the information's good. And we had a little B-roll in there. We had a little, you know, post-production, but it doesn't have to be expensive. It doesn't have to be time consuming. There's all kinds of tools you can use to help you write the scripts, optimize the, you know, description, the title for SEO. You know, I think people should be churning out YouTube content. And content, the biggest change that's happened in marketing since I've joined 11 years ago, Gary, was 11 years ago, it was about publishing stuff on your blog. And like, you know, you remember these days, and, you know, it's about like writing stuff and publishing online. Everything is now social media. I mean, social media is eaten all that up. So you need to be extremely active on the social channels that make sense to you. If you're selling B2B and it's kind of high ticket and your buyers are on on LinkedIn, you need to be really aggressive on LinkedIn. That's one thing that's been interesting for me is this is the first company I've worked at where our buyers really aren't on LinkedIn because they're small business owners. So a lot of what I'm doing, I like YouTube a lot because they probably are on YouTube, you know? So, you know, think about where your buyers are and then just really aggressively create, I'd say content. Video content is great on any social media channel now, which is great. So You can publish on YouTube, you can publish on LinkedIn, you can publish it wherever else you want to publish it. But I definitely think video is the way to go. In 2025.
Absolutely. Totally agree. Yeah. So one loaded question for you, Jeremy, before we leave. If you wanted the listeners or the viewers of this episode to take away one piece, if you had to summarize one piece of advice, one takeaway for them today, what would it be?
Yeah, I would say don't start out thinking I have to pay money to go get a bunch of customers. You know, I would look at what are the free growth channels I can leverage. And all you do is you figure out, okay, like search for the main search term in your industry, you know, and see what is ranking organically for that. Do it on Google, do it on YouTube. You'll see those paid placements at the top, but beneath that, you'll see some organic ones and, you know, figure out how to get on those lists by any means necessary, you know? So I would say don't pay to play, find the free channels that work for you and, you know, commit to them. And no matter how long, even if it takes you a year to get on that number one ranking, you know, search article or whatever, like just keep hacking at it until you get it. So, that's just free money for you. So
exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Don't turn down free money.
Yeah. Everyone loves that. It makes me money, save me money, keep me out of jail. It's got to be one of those three, right?
Yes.
Absolutely love that. So Jeremy, if people would like to potentially work with you, get to know, you know, have a chat with you or whatever, what's the best way they can do that?
Yeah. You can find me on LinkedIn, Jeremy Boudinet. Please reach out to me there. Or my email is Jeremy, Jeremy at TextLA.com. I'm always down chat marketing. I love talking shop. I think one more thing I'll say, Gary, is that I joined Ambition. I didn't have like an experienced marketing leader I was working under to learn marketing. I learned it all in the trenches. But what I finally figured out like 2 years in was like, oh, I can call these other guys who also are marketing leaders at high tech, you know, high growth tech startups, and I can ask what they're doing that's working for them. So a lot of what I do now, a lot of the best tactics I've gotten, strategies I've gotten is for me calling someone who's smarter than me at marketing and being like, what's working for you? You know, and they'll tell you, you know what I mean? Then I'll trade information with them. So I'm always down to talk shop in marketing. If you want to talk about what you're doing that's working, I'll tell you why I'm doing that's working. And then just in general, that's the best practice is go talk to other marketing leaders and ask them, what are you doing that's working? And listen to shows like Gary's.
Yeah. That's brilliant. Well, Jeremy, thank you very much for joining us today. Mate, it's been an absolute honor and, you know, pleasure having you on. Your answers have been absolutely fantastic. Thank you for your time today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Gary. Appreciate it.
Not at all. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us for another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast. There were some great insights that Jeremy dropped today. And if you're going to pick one of those up and run with it, please make sure you like it and comment so other people can see, you know, what's working for you and perhaps it will work for them. But as usual, we all know, you know, that we grow by standing on the shoulders of giants, on the giants of Jeremy and all the other leaders that we have on this podcast. So by all means, share it with other people, share this episode with other people so that we can all grow together. So until the next episode, keep striving, keep growing, but more importantly, be profitable. And we'll see you on the next episode. Bye-bye.